You've probably heard the term realign thrown around a couple times. You've probably noticed that people are a bit more excited today, which is great. We're going to run with that for a little while. It's really good just that so many of us this weekend have had our hearts just realigned and kind of refigured towards God and repositioned. And man, it's really cool just to see what God has done in us. And there's something awesome about being expectant about God and asking him to move, and he does it. Like, God does it. Like, we're not worthy of that. That's insane. That's crazy that that's what he does, that we ask him to change us and he changes us. And it's just so cool, and it's an awesome thing to be a part of. And in case you missed the first three sessions, like I talked about, you can go on to realignconference.com and you can listen to those. They'll be on our church website pretty soon as well. But I want to kind of walk you through an overview of what we talked about in case you missed it, so that you're not left out, because everyone here is a part of this thing now. You're at Realign. So in the first session, Chad, who came from Alabama to talk with us, Chad's in the back, wave at us. He's awesome. I'm not going to play the music, don't worry, but that's Chad. We looked at Genesis 3, 8 through 21, at how in the very beginning God pursued us. And even as we as people bring sin into the world and we do just dumb things, and Adam and Eve kind of started that trend for us, that God still pursued us in the middle of really just being slapped in the face with our rebellion, with us going against who he was. And even in the midst of that, he still comes after us. And that means for us that even in our sin, in the midst of all of our fear and all of our shame and our guilt and all the stuff that we put on ourselves, God still comes after us. And he still pursues us, and he still wants to pull us in, and he wants us. That's just a crazy thought. And then in session two, we talked about being created for pursuit and looked at Matthew 6, 25 through 34. And God tells us not to worry about practical things. And there's definitely a warning in there of, like, we don't want to go after the things of this world and get consumed with them. Because it's so easy to just get this all-consuming passion for things that don't matter. Like, it's so easy for us to do that in our world. And we can get caught up in this cycle of always wanting more and more. And I think that's something that's built in us. Like, I think we have this thing built in us to want more and more, but it's more and more of God. And when we take that and redirect it towards something temporary, it just fails every single time. It just doesn't do it for us. And Chad talked about doing these five things, about hearing from God in the Bible, giving ourselves to prayer, engaging in worship, committing to people, and then doing something, actually stepping out in our faith as ways to pursue the King, not just the kingdom, not just the things that we see around us, but actually the King himself. And then in session three last night, we talked about desperate pursuit, and we looked at John 11, 1 through 44, and the story of Lazarus, and how in the midst of Mary and Martha's pain that God still came to them. He still pursued them. And in the middle of them feeling just anguish over their brother dying and their brother being lost, that God still came. And even when healing doesn't come, God still is pursuing us. He's still coming after us, and he's still loving us. And it's really cool just to look at the pursuit of God on us and the way that we get to pursue him back. And there's this really cool just kind of symbolism of us just like chasing after each other and meeting in the middle, like this kind of old like 80s movie, you know, where it's just like, oh God, you know. And like, it's such a cool thing just the way that that all works. But the world is not really like that, you know. Like, that's all true, that's all good, but the world that doesn't know God, like, we go after different things. We are very differently pointed than the rest of the people in the world. And that was incredibly evident to me this last week. Autumn and I went to a concert last week, an Alicia Cara concert. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of her. I freaking love Alicia Cara. Like, I'm not even ashamed. Like, she, like, me and the other 16-year-old girls were loving it. And, like, not even, she's the one who did the Moana, How Far I'll Go song at the end of the credits. Like, and I am not ashamed. Like, I'm just telling you right now, I dragged Autumn along on our date night 2 days before Realign and was like, we're going to this concert. She is awesome. And we went and listened to her, and it really was a great show. It was pretty good, right? It was. All right, though, as the worship team comes back up, and I know. No, it was really a great show, and she has just this incredible voice, and she does on the Tonight Show pretty often those like musical wheel impression things that are just unbelievable. Like what she can do is, and it was fun to listen to. But there's one song in particular that a lot of you guys have probably heard and probably just didn't know who it was. It's called "Scars to Your Beautiful," and it's this really powerful song about. Just about standing on the truth of who we are and not trying to measure up to everyone around us and being confident. And the chorus here goes, "But there's a hope that's waiting for you in the dark. You should know you're beautiful just the way you are, and you don't have to change a thing. The world could change its heart." And it's just really cool, let's stop trying to be like everyone else, and there's so much depression that comes out of that and so many issues and all that. So, I mean, I agree, that's such a cool thing. But when she got up to introduce the song, Autumn and I were both just like, "Gah," because she got up and she was like, "This is what this song means, and this is what it means to me, and it's like, you're beautiful the way you are, and you don't have to change, and you're great." And I was like, "Yeah, I'm on board with that." And then she's like, "You are perfect the way you are. You don't need to change a single thing." And Autumn and I are like, "No." That's no. And then she's like, "You never need to change anything about yourself again." We're like, "No, she's like, "You need to be confident in who you are right in this moment." We're like, "Yeah, this is not a great," and Autumn was like, "You should not be confident in yourself, Yale." I'm like, "This is a great concert." And she was like, "If anyone doesn't like you, they're wrong. You're right." And then she was like, "Never change, be you." And I was thinking this, I'm like, man, I could not disagree more with everything she just said at the end of that. Because I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I am so jacked up, it's not even funny. I definitely need to change. There are so many things in me that are messed up, and there's so many things in me. And even in a weekend like this where I'm getting closer to God, it's like this 50-50 of man, he's breaking these things in me and I'm getting better. But then I see the other 12 things I hadn't seen before, and there's just more to change. And it's definitely forward progression. It's better, but there's always something to change. And hearing this, saying if anyone doesn't like you, then they're wrong. I'm like, no, I'm wrong plenty. You know, a lot of you guys know I say stupid things. During the Q&A yesterday, Alex asked a great question where he's like, "Well, what if somebody gives somebody bad advice and you're like, I don't know if that's good advice?" And I was like, "If it was me, I'm sorry." You know, I give bad advice. I'm a human, you know? And I'm going to be messed up, and man, if I think I'm right and they think they're right, it's at least a 50-50 that they're right. You know? This is not a this isn't rocket science here. And I feel like I should always be changing all of the time. And I came away from that concert with this brand new realization that should not be brand new, but it was. And I was like, the world doesn't want to change. The world doesn't want to change. I didn't hear that, but it sounded funny. The world doesn't want to change, and Christians do. And I started thinking about this, and I was like, all of our ads as a church are like, change, find purpose, find direction. And I was just like, I think we're advertising wrong because they don't want that. And when we look in 2 Timothy about the people who are always waiting for what their itching ears want to hear, I'm like, that's it. It's you're perfect. And we don't see that anywhere in the Bible. We don't see perfection in any person in the Bible. And I was just I was seriously struck with this idea of when there are people that don't know Jesus, even here at church, and I'm like, man, we can change so much. I'd never thought of that as a negative. Because I'm so messed up, I want to change. I want to get better. And there's this forward motion that happens in change. And so many of us have been changed this weekend, and God has spoken so much in this weekend and pushed things in different places. And it's like we're on this treadmill running forward in this forward motion. And what happens when you stop running on a moving treadmill? It shoots you off the back. I've done that. It's fun. When you stop moving on a treadmill, and yes, I've been on a treadmill, stop. When the treadmill's moving and you stop moving, it shoots you back. And let me ask you a question. Is the world pointing and moving towards God or away from him right now? Away. Like, even non-Christians think that. Like, the entire world would agree it is moving away from God. A lot of us are happy, or a lot of us are sad about it. A lot of them are happy about it. But it's moving away from God. So what happens when we stop moving towards God? We move away from him. We don't just stop. We start flying off the back of it. And I'll kind of keep going with this jogging analogy or being on a treadmill. I work out with my brother Josh a couple times a week, and I've always just like lifted weights. And when I started working out with him, he's like, "Let's warm up on a treadmill." And I was like, "Are you freaking kidding me?" But we got on the treadmill, and we do it every single time. And a couple times a week, we get on this treadmill, and he sets it to medium jog, and I set it to fast walk. And we go next to each other, and I have asthma, and I'm like, I'm not going to even try that. And I kind of walk on this treadmill, and every time he would hit stop, and it does like the slow down thing until you can get off. And I was like, early on, I found out if you like double tap the stop button or you like hit it a bunch of times, it stops quicker. So I was like, I don't want to wait there as it slows down. I want to get done and get off. So I'm like, hit this thing. And I was like legitimately proud of myself for figuring this out. So we would we'd run for like 5 minutes on this before we got going. I'd tap it a couple times. I'd get off, and I was kind of had this like smug, like, I beat the system, you know? Like, I did this thing, and I beat it. And like a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I told Josh about my like ingenious hack of hitting the button. And I realized very quickly that it stopped quicker because I was going slower. That's the only reason. Hitting it multiple times did nothing. If you hit it one time, it stops the same speed as if you hit it multiple times. It just is what it is. this is a true story, obviously. And I realized that Josh's quick pace made it so that when the stop button was hit, it took longer to slow down. And I think a lot of times as Christians, we can be like, well, what if I just pace myself towards God so I don't burn myself out? And when you hit the stop button, it stops. And we start going backwards, and we're going away from God, and everything backtracks, and everything's done. But when we're sprinting after God, realizing that rest is still good, and realizing that a schedule that is well set is still good, and all those things, when we are sprinting after God, even if the enemy throws in a stop button, it takes longer to stop. And we can realize it's slowing down, we can hit it back up. On a treadmill, I wouldn't, but you get the idea. And we're at this point right now after this weekend, at the end of this forward momentum, where we're just like, okay, I can either enact change and I can do something about this, or I can get off the treadmill and that was that thing I did. I mean, that's where all of us are at right now. Whether you were at the first three sessions or you're just at session four, or even if you're listening online, that's where we're at right now. We can take what God's doing and we can keep running and enact change, or we can backtrack. And there's a guy in the Bible who we see who picks the second one of those and backtracks, and his name is Solomon. Solomon in 1 Kings starts out with like everything given to him. First off, he's David's son. It's pretty cool. Me too. It's I have not had much sleep. Yeah, that's true. I would have made that joke anyway. Thank you, Nick. That was a loving truth from a brother. Okay. So we see this story of King Solomon where he's born under David. He's like, he's in line for the throne. Like, he's one of like God's chosen line. We know Jesus is coming from the line of his family. He just kind of has it from the beginning. Like, God just gives him so much. And then in 1 Kings 1:30, we see that God makes him king. So if you want to turn with me to 1 Kings, we're going to kind of go through 1 Kings today. It'll be on the screen and also on the app. Verse 30, it says, "I will surely carry out this very day what I swore to you by the Lord, the God of Israel. The Solomon your son shall be king after me, and he will sit on my throne in my place." So David's speaking, and he says, my son Solomon, he's going to be king. And then we see in 1 Kings 2, he gets this blessing from his dad, and he gives him the authority, not only of king, but also of his family and also of everything they own. And in 1 Kings 3, 7 through 14, he asked for wisdom. And Solomon is asked, like, what do you want anything in the world by God? And he says, I want wisdom. Like, this is what I want. If I could have anything in the world, it would be wisdom. In verse 9, 1 Kings 3, 9, it says, so give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who's able to govern this great people of yours? Let me also just say, you have to kind of be a wise guy to ask for wisdom and not stuff. So he's already starting on a pretty good step. And then he asked for wisdom. In verse 10, the Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, since you have asked for this and not for lifelong or for a long life or wealth for yourself, nor have you asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, I'll do what you've asked. I'll give you a wise and discerning heart so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Moreover, I'll give you what you've not asked for, both wealth and honor, so that in your lifetime you will have no equal among kings. And if you walk in obedience to me and keep my decrees and commands as David your father did, I'll give you a long life. Man, I'm happy if I can just like do the couple things I have to do in the day. But this guy is given like everything right out the gate here. And then we see right after that, he solves a dispute between two women about who is the mom of the baby in this just amazingly wise way. Where I tried to do this a couple weeks ago, like no joke, with Ben and Ellie, where they both wanted a candy bar. And I was like, what if I cut it in half? And they're like, that's a great idea. And I was like, dang it. Not Solomon. But... So as the worship team comes, no. So he does that. And then in 1 Kings 4, he builds this amazing team of officials and governors that run different parts of the country. And he expands Judah, and the people have all they need and more. And he amasses this huge empire that's constantly dedicated to the glory of God. He's doing just everything right. And people came from far and wide to hear of the wise things that Solomon had to say. Like, just think about that. People hear about how wise you are, and they travel to see if it's true. That's who this man was. In 1 Kings 5, he built an incredible temple for God that takes the place of the tabernacle, and it's the temple where the veil is torn years later with Jesus. And it takes 56 verses just to describe what it looked like in 1 Kings 5 and 6. 56 verses, just because it was so ornate, so beautiful, he knocked this thing out of the park. It would take about 4 verses to describe this building. 56 verses about this amazing temple for God. And then another 39 verses just to describe the furnishings, like the stuff in the building. It's amazing. And then in 1 Kings 8, he brings the Ark of the Covenant, which is just the like where God dwells on earth. And he prays and he dedicates it to God. And in 1 Kings 9, 3, God promises that his eyes and his heart will always be there on the temple that Solomon built. That's quite a promise. That's insane. He built towns. He made burnt offerings to God. And he led his people well. He did this incredible job. He knocked it out of the park. Like, I'm just happy if I take care of the first 3 things on my list of 10 every day. And this guy is just like knocking it out of the park in every area of his life. And then it turns. He's on this treadmill. He's going great. And all of a sudden, he starts to kind of slow down and he stops. And we see in chapter 10 that this whole thing goes down. And it starts with the Queen of Sheba visiting Solomon, and this woman comes to look at him and be like, what's going on there? Is he really as smart as everyone says he is? Is there wisdom? And we see this in 1 Kings 10, 6. She said to the king, the report I've heard in my own country about your achievements and your wisdom is true, but I did not believe these things until I came and saw with my own eyes. Indeed, not even half was told me. In wisdom and wealth, you have far exceeded the report I heard. How happy your people must be, how happy your officials who continually stand before you and hear your wisdom. She's like, you're knocking it out of the park. And she brings him a ton of gifts. In 1 Kings 10:10, she gave the king 120 talents of gold, large quantities of spices and precious stones. Never again were there so many spices brought in as those the Queen Sheba gave to King Solomon. So 120 talents. I know you know exactly how much that means, but for anyone who doesn't, I'm just kidding. No one knows that. 120 talents is 2.5 tons of gold. I don't just mean like that's a ton. I mean like a ton as like a measurement. And that is worth roughly today in how much gold is worth, $198,270,000. Almost $200 million. Yeah, that's insane. And then four verses later in 1 Kings 10:14, it says the weight of gold that Solomon received yearly was 666 talents. So not including the revenues from merchants and traders from all the Arabian kings and governors of the territory. So just like his paycheck, not his bonus schedule, was 666 talents. And that's worth roughly $1.1 billion. So $1,101,500,000 a year. That's Amazon numbers, people. Like, this is this is like Jeff Bezos. But, I mean, it really is. Jeff Bezos is worth $109 billion. It does not take long to get to $109 billion when that's your yearly income. And when you have all these other things that you're conquering and growing. And this is kind of the turn that we start to see of him starting to go down the path of, like, I want these worldly things. And in verse 16, he makes these amazing gold shields with this gold. And it says in 18 that he made a throne out of ivory and gold, and nothing like it had ever been made for any other kingdom. Now, he had money before. Dude was already rich. Judah was already doing well. But there's a difference between I have money, God's blessed me, and I'm using it for his kingdom, and this amazing amount of money comes in, and I'm building these shields that no one's ever seen. I'm building this throne that nothing like it had ever been made before. We're changing the game here. The whole world can bow down to what I've got. And the attitude changes here, and he gets this fleet of ships. You don't get a fleet of ships for whale watching. Like, he's taking stuff over. He's showing his dominance. He's got chariots and horses that can go protect them and take more land. And we see in chapter 11 that Solomon goes even more off the deep end. 11 verse 1 says, King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women besides Pharaoh's daughter, who is his wife. Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonites, and Hittites. They were from nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, you must not intermarry with them, because they will surely turn your hearts after their gods. Nevertheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. It's interesting here that we don't even see, like, the issue with him sleeping around. Like, that's an issue. But we don't see that as the thing that's pointed out. The thing that's pointed out here is that he's going after things that are going to turn his heart away from God. And there's a lot of stuff in our culture that's going to turn our hearts away from God. There's a lot of things in our culture and in our world that when we go after them, they feel fine up front, but those are things that he warns us are going to take our hearts away from God. There's things all through Scripture. Even the word for lust and pornography and things like that in the New Testament is porneia, and it covers like an entire group of things that we would call movies, that we would just call media, that we would just call dressing comfortably. There's all these things that look like the world that it says here, God warns them because it will surely turn your hearts after their gods. And we see him make that choice in 1 Kings 11:3. He had 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. Duh. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God as the heart of David's his father had been. He followed Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. So Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely as David his father had done. And even David messed up a lot. So to compare him next to David and be like, you weren't as good as that, that's a, you know. On a hill east of Jerusalem, Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable god of Moab, and for Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. He did the same for all his foreign wives who burned incense and offered sacrifices to their gods. So this guy that wants nothing more than wisdom, to see the world the way that God sees it and to lead the way that God leads, he changes everything to follow these other gods because he focused on the world. Because he let these things in that God even warned him were going to get him there. It says, the Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord. And ultimately, eventually this kingdom gets pulled away from Solomon and it gets given to somebody else and in his son's generation. And it's hard. Well, let me say first off, it's easy to see this story and be like, that was some king way back when, who cares? But at the same time, it's really easy to see a lot of this stuff in our lives. Because I don't think that Solomon ever even saw where he fell. I don't think there's any point where Solomon's like, yep, step past that line. Oh, well, you know, like, I think he just kept going. And before he knew it, he realized, oh, that was way over there. I've walked away from all this stuff that God had done. I've walked away from all this stuff that God has been in my life. And we see this amazing guy stop pursuing God and instead start pursuing the world. But even more than that, he started pursuing the blessing of God before that. He stopped pursuing God himself and started pursuing the blessing of God, the amazing stuff that God had given him. And we can so easily do that. That is an epidemic in the church as a whole. Just looking at the church worldwide and in our country, how often do we chase after the blessings of God instead of God himself? How often do we look at, like we just talked about in our last sermon series, looking at our building and being like, man, look at what God's doing, instead of looking at God. And look at how much God's grown me. It's so cool, instead of looking at God. Like, that stuff's great. But we need to look at God. We can't stop pursuing him himself. Jesus doing things in our lives. We have to look at him. And I really wish I could tell you that the breakthrough that a lot of you guys have experienced this weekend can just like go on forever and you can just be like, cool, that happened and now I'm at this point. But that's not how it works. When we stop running on that treadmill, it shoots us off the back. And the world in all of this is going to tell you that you don't need to change a thing. That you don't need to keep moving. You don't need to keep pressing. Man, you got better. That's awesome. You're perfect the way you are. If anyone says you're wrong, they're wrong. And no, that's just not true. Because do you guys know what it'll take, what it'll cost to follow God with your whole life? It costs your whole life. It costs everything. When we look at salvation in the Bible, it's not like, yeah, I'll take that. That sounds good. No, it's like it costs everything. Everything that you held on to goes away. Like it costs you your whole life to pursue God with your whole life. And that means that we don't always get our way. In my experience, I don't usually get my way. It means that we're rarely comfortable, if ever. I think comfort is just straight out the enemy of God. There's not much comfortable when you follow Jesus. It means that your time is not your own. And the stuff that you want to do and the stuff that you want to spend your time doing is not always the thing that you're supposed to be doing. And it means that deciding on our future isn't actually deciding, it's listening. We don't get to decide where we go. We get to listen. That's it. It means that we're not in control and we no longer get to pursue our wants and the things that sound really good and make us feel good. And it means, like Chad said, that you need to give yourself to hearing from God in the Bible and giving yourselves to prayer and engaging in worship and committing to people and doing something and stepping out in faith, even when it doesn't feel good. And I would say especially when it doesn't feel good. And there's probably a couple things on that list that have never felt good and might not ever feel good. And it still is what it takes to pursue God with your whole life. We have to jump into this stuff because to pursue God with our whole lives costs our whole lives, everything. And let me just be vulnerable with you for a second and kind of harsh. Yeah, it's getting harsh now. Looking out in this room, I can almost guarantee you that there's going to be a couple of us that hear about Realign next year and say, yeah, that's that thing that that church I used to go to does. I can almost promise you that a year from now, somebody's going to look back at that one time I tried Jesus. And that is gut-wrenching. Because right now where you're sitting in your seat, you know that this is right. Right now when you're sitting here and when you've experienced this, you know that that God that showed up this weekend is real and is right and is true. And a couple misplaced steps and slowing down just a little bit takes everything out. And there's not a single person in this room that is exempt from that. You might look at life group leaders or pastors or whatever and think, well, they're not going to do that. No, we're more likely to do that statistically. Every single one of us, one misplaced thing, going after one earthly thing, loving the hand of God more than the face of God, one time is enough to stop us, slow us down, and shoot us off the back right into the world. Like, I wish I could say that this was easy and you just have to keep trying and you got to pace yourself, but we have to sprint like our life depends on it, because our life depends on it, and everyone out there that doesn't know Jesus, their lives depend on it too. We have to pursue after God with everything we have in every moment we can, the best of our ability, or we are going to fail. It's just that heavy. Like, that's what this is. But guys, I'm telling you, he's the only thing that's worth it. He's the only thing that's worth it. He's the only thing that's actually going to bring the hope that you need. He's the only thing that's going to bring the relief that you need. And there's a lot of hardship, there's a lot of pushing, but there's also so much grace. There's also so much love, there's so much patience, there's so much that he puts in us in the midst of that. And I can't imagine looking at myself in a mirror and believing Alicia Cara and being like, you're perfect, because it is a lie. But we serve a God who wants to make us a lot closer to perfect. We just need to keep seeking him. So as the worship team actually does come up this time, I want to encourage us, like, I don't want to end like Solomon. I don't want to end like David. I don't want to end like a bunch of people. I want to look back like Paul and say, look, I screwed up a lot, but 2 Timothy 4:7, I fought the good fight and I finished the race and I've kept the faith. I'm missing a limb or two, but I made it to the end. That's what it means to pursue God. And I want to leave you with this. When you guys came in, you got this communication card. If you can kind of fold off the bottom of that. Does anyone need one? Raise your hand if you need one. We've got one back here. Yeah, we've got one coming in. Keep your hand raised if you need one. Tear off the bottom of that card. If you could give us your info and all that on the front, that would be awesome. But on the back, there's a couple next steps. And the first thing here, I just want to go really practical with this. We've had a weekend of God touching us emotionally and doing things and working through stuff in us. Let's figure out a plan for what this is going to look like. So the first thing is that I'll write down a plan for responding to what God did in me this weekend. And even if that's just in the last 20 minutes and that's what you're responding to, make a plan for how you stay on that treadmill. Make a plan for how you're going to keep going after God in this. And I don't know what that looks like for you. I'm not the most planning person in the world. For me, it might just be like, don't suck on my arm. Like, that might be my plan. I don't know. For a lot of you guys, like, if it's Autumn, she's going to have a 25-step plan that's color-coded, and it's like, this is what it looks like on Monday and Tuesday. Like, whatever it takes for you to make a literal, actual plan to do something and keep sticking with it, do it. The second thing here is I'll commit to pursue God in this area of my life. And in that, I want you to write the darkest, worst, most standstill thing in your life that you're like, in this area of my life, I am failing. And take that out. Just topple it from the top. Go for the worst thing you can go for. And if that means that it's pornography and you can't stop watching it, then you write that there. I'm the only one who's going to see this. Put it in the box. I'll get it out myself. If that's where you want to do this and you want prayer for that, then write, I cannot stop watching pornography. I need to beat this. And if you need to write, I cannot stop talking about people behind their backs, then write that on there. And if the area is greed, if the area is jealousy, if the area is whatever in your life, write that area, start with that and tackle it. And in that area this week, start pursuing God. And the third thing here is I'll run the race like I'm going to make it somewhere. And that's an incredibly important part of this, that if you think you're going to fail, you probably are. So start running, not like you're going to just piddle out and die in a week. Start running like you're going to make it. And then everyone around you gets to hold up your arms and run with you and make it together. So as we go into worship right now, and we finish this up, if you don't need to worship and you just need to sit and write, do it. If you need to go get prayer from somebody in the back, do it. If you need to go to the bathroom and cry, do it. I'll be in line. Whatever you need to do to make a plan to get through this, to look at an area of your life and say, I'm going to beat that, and to make sure you keep running, do it. Because ultimately, an emotional experience will not get you past the end of today. But going after God, pursuing Him, and changing your life, enacting change is what's going to make it. So stand up with me. Let me pray for us, and we'll go into worship. God, we are humbled that You are a God that wants to change us. And when You look at us, You don't see perfection. And I'm so thankful that You look at us and that You don't see something that doesn't need to change. You look at us and You have mercy on us to help change us, to fix us, to move us, to build us. Lord, I pray right now that You would speak areas of our lives that we need to tackle, that we need to pursue You in. Not everything, because we're not going to be perfect tomorrow, but can You give us an area of our life that we can really press into? And God, will You show us what it looks like to link arms with the people around us and run it like we're going to make it? And God, we love You. I pray right now that You would just speak tangible things, that You would help us, that You would encourage us to go talk to somebody else to get help. Whatever it is, God, will we do this right now? Make us a people that see this and run after it, God. We love You. Thank You for letting us pursue You. Amen.